Well, next guest, we're talking about a period where St Kilda emerged in the early 90s under Ken Sheldon through that 90, 91, 92 period. And you look at the numbers of Craig Devenport and it reads 94 games. But if you remember back through that era, he pops up in a lot of significant moments and a lot of key memories and key stages through that period and had a really significant impact for a few years. They had a very good final series in 92, had a very good final in 91, one where St Kilda obviously could have gone a little bit deeper, and played some great footy through 1990, ended up at Carlton and ironically played in an Anzac Cup grand final against the Saints, which was a memorable night for the Saints as well. But Craig, nice to have you with us. It's been a fascinating journey and we want to get stuck into having a chat about the career.
Thanks, Darren. Yeah, it's good to be here. Good to see you guys.
Now, recruited from Croydon, can you sort of take us through your journey that led you to the Saints in the late 80s?
Yeah, it started off actually at Seville Footy Club, basically. My best friend as a kid was a guy called Shane Hill, who you guys might know, who played the 4 or 5 Olympics in basketball. So my early days was basketball and soccer. I only played probably a handful of games before I turned 15, there was a recruiter guy at the club. His name was Murray Ablett, and his dad was my mum's boss at a place in Ringwood. And so they come and saw me a couple of times, and I was fortunate enough to kick a few goals playing for Croydon at that stage. And I was 15, I think we kicked 37 goals in two games. I kicked 37 goals in two games. So I was the competition obviously wasn't that good, let me tell you. But I stood out some way. I was in the Carlton zone. And that was those that days. Obviously, we didn't have the draft as is now. And when you turn 15 and a half, the whoever's in what zone, the recruitment officer could be at VFL House back at that stage and put your name down so you're on that list. It was. I turned 15 and a half on a Sunday. VFL House wasn't open. I was a massive St Kilda supporter. And Murray Ablett went to VFL House that Monday morning, 6 o'clock. The Carlton guy arrived at 9. They said, hopefully not here for the same person. And Murray got to go first. So from that morning, I was a St Kilda player.
What's it like walking into the St Kilda club rooms as a massive St Kilda fan and seeing Plugger and Spartan and all those guys that you would have idolized or watched as a kid growing up? What was that moment like?
I was Trevor Barker fanatic, you know, he was just my life as a kid, you know, like we didn't win any games, but we had Trevor and we had Robbo. Trevor was pretty influential a part of getting me there because you know how much I loved him. And unfortunately, when I was 14, my father and Shane Hill's father, they passed away in the same accident. So after that time when St Kilda come, Trevor was very influential in helping me in a lot of ways. So when to walk in and see him and, it's just amazing for me because, you know, I hadn't played much footy and I was, a basketball or soccer player, but I always wanted to play footy. Walking in, it's still surreal. When I think back, people say, you know, would you like to be playing now for the money? Like I said, yeah, of course, but you can't ever take away I did with, you know, having Trevor there and to play with him games and, you know, just the whole, it was a different situation back then than it is now anyways, as we know.
So your first game is against Essendon in round 5 in 89.
Yep.
Assume you've played 4 reserve games before that match or possibly up to 4. Take us through the 4 weeks leading up to the round 5 match where you debuted.
Yeah, 89. So I think I had been emergency back in those days. It was only 18 plus 2. I've been emergency like 15 or 16 times in the previous 2 years. I broke my jaw in 88, so I missed a lot of that year. And they started off pretty well at the start of the season reserves. We played the grand final in the reserves in 87, which was pretty good. Being a 17-year-old playing that. So I had some good grounding. It started off, I think we played against Collingwood in round 4 and played pretty well. And then I remember Spud coming to me on Tuesday night and said, just get around Plugger's legs on Tuesday night training because if you do it right, you're going to get a game. So all I did was just follow him around the training Tuesday and Thursday night. And yeah, it was pretty surreal. Bucks, was played and he picked me up for the game drove to Windy Hill with him and it was just amazing to have, you know, players like him. Jeff Cunningham, all those players who I loved. A good story about that game is, I think, in the first quarter, when you grow up in the late 70s and 80s, you remember some players, Timmy Watson, Peter Dacos, Doug Hawkins, they're the three players who I like from the team. I remember trying to tackle someone and then Timmy Watson just ran past and bumped me. He ran off and the 32 looked like it was just like the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life when he ran past, and he just turned around and smirked and he goes, "Bit do better than that, son." And it was just amazing to see, you know, like you're out there that was a pretty cool moment for me.
Now I imagine it was always the goal kicking targets in terms of how you were going to get yourself into that side as a young forward, and that came to fruition through 1990, playing all 22 games, some memorable ones in there, 5 against the Cats in a game we lost at Waverley, 6 in a win over Fitzroy, big game against Brisbane at Moorabbin when Plugger kicked probably 1,000, started the year well against Footscray, and 5 in the first quarter against West Coast in a game we led by 50 points and got rolled in. But can you sort of take us through that 1990? Would have been a special year to establish yourself like that.
Yeah, it was Gary Colling actually who went to Ken Sheldon in the 90 preseason and said, "We're going to put Devo back down. I think he's going to be a good backman, even to learn, you know, to learn the game." So they put me in the back pocket through that preseason, and all those goals I kicked basically was I was moved down for a quarter or two and always started in the back pocket. But I had a love playing in the back pocket, love we had a run off Bud because, you know, you knew what's kicking CJ Tambor to you every time. But yeah, so that was where that year started from. And I think not to be forward pocket or half forward flank the whole game really helped me and learning the actual game, because what some people don't know is my 100th game of footy was my, I think, 45th senior AFL game of footy. So I hadn't played, you know, kids had played 100 games before they're 12, 13. I didn't have that upbringing. So I was still learning every second of every game I was playing in the AFL. And you know, when I look back, I was far behind, you know, because I hadn't had that 100, 200 games as a kid.
So what was it like at the end of 1990? You kind of top 5 disposal getter in the team. You know, you kicked 28, 29 goals for the year. Like, did you feel like you'd kind of made it and consolidated a spot in the team, or how was it going into 1991 after that season?
Yep, no, definitely I did, and I had gained a lot of confidence in that. With about 2 weeks to go in the preseason 91, I was kicking the ball at training, and my quad just burst. So I think I missed the first 12 or 13 weeks of that year in 91, which was hard, especially after coming off every game. And so then it took me three or four reserve games to get back in towards the end of 91, probably start around 16 or 17. And then we played, you know, I was lucky enough to be in there for the finals again, but I was truly underdone for a lot of the rest of that year. The final against Geelong was a really good game. The quad really made things hard. I had a really big preseason and put a 3 or 4 kilos on in the right areas and, yeah, looking forward to it. But then, yeah, it just went pop.
Pulse your way back into the team. Started off okay, but then started picking up really well. 23 touches, 24 touches, leads into the finals. You feel like you were definitely consolidated back into the team at that point. And how was the confidence going into those finals?
That first final against Geelong was, you know, amazing. Well, I think it was the first final in 20. Or 23 years, whatever it was, and we had a good team. We were really confident. You know, it was a great game. I think Lockett and Billy Brown, I think they kicked, 18 or 19 goals between us, full forwards. Like, what a game. And, I think we lost by 7 points, but we were certainly in there. There was a couple of things in the second or third quarter which could have made that game better for us. I thought we had a great team that year to go further. I think Gary Ablett had a bit to say. Well, I think he might have knocked out Berkey and Brandy that game.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you've only got two on the bench, it makes it difficult. So, yeah, no, I loved playing that game. I've got really fond memories. I played on Andrew Buse and I loved, yeah, it was a great atmosphere. It was at VFL Park. We would like to play that at MCG, but it was at VFL Park. It was sort of our home ground after that the next year. So, no, it was good.
We've had David Grant and Nathan Burke on the podcast at various times, and unfortunately because of Gary Ablett, neither of them remember that game at all, unfortunately. But, my dad's often spoken about the roar of the crowd when the first goal of the game was kicked by Gilbert McAdam, given the lengthy drought.
Yeah.
Into 92, obviously, there's a lot to talk about through that season. You've had 60 shots at goal, had a terrific year. We'll talk about your final series later where you were positive, but I guess the question that a lot of people would want to know listening to this podcast, what did Ken Shelton say to you on the boundary at the MCG?
Oh, yeah, right, of course.
We have had him on, Bomber. So.
Have you?
Yeah. We have.
So I took his daughter out the night before, and he wasn't very happy with that. What happened.
Nah.
No, that's one story, but I wouldn't believe that one. Kenny and I had a really good relationship, and he was great for my career at the end of the day, you know, because he was playing in 89 and then he coached in 90. So we had that player sort of then coached. But he gave me a chance, sort of grabbed me at the start of the preseason, said, "We're going to do this, and you know, here's a slate. I'm just going to wipe the slate clean of whatever's happened in the past. This is how we're working it." So he actually got a blackboard and wrote all stuff on it and just rubbed it all out and go, "That's your slate." And so that was really good. He had a different way of dealing with everyone, like you can, probably can't do it these days, but he felt like when Craig Kelly ran through me, I probably should have stopped Craig Kelly, which I still don't understand how I could have. He dragged me off and thought he'd just run down, you know, from where he was and start, you know, slapping me around a little bit, at the time, you know, I knew something was pretty big, but didn't realize, you know, 40 years later, whatever, 30, how is it 30 years, 40 years later, it's 30 years later, still being brought up every year, every time. Plugger wasn't the happiest after that. Plugger didn't play that game, but he drove me to the footy that day and we drove. Yeah, he wasn't too happy with Kenny. He thought that he might go and talk to him after the game. I said, "Don't worry about it, mate." They were, you know, and we walked out, and there's, you know, just press everywhere, wanting to deal with it. And it was a big week of hearing and everyone know what he said. So basically, he told me I was weak because Craig Kelly ran through me and they hit the goal.
did you have any words back to him after the game, after you kicked the goal?
No, he just came to me and said, "Well done." He said, you answered what I asked you to do. And so that was it. We didn't really speak too much about it during the week. He came and patted me on the head, I think, on the Tuesday night, and just that was done. You know, like it was in part of the game. And he just thought that, well, that's what I needed that time to, you know, whatever for the game. So, yeah, we were lucky enough to kick that goal at the end there, and we won by a point.
What, as Darren mentioned, kind of the finals run in 92 as well, but you had a record of playing really good footy in your three finals games. You had 26 touches in that Geelong game in 91, 17 and a goal in the elimination final over Collingwood in 92, and then 20 touches and three goals won in the semi-final loss to the Dogs. I mean, where does that sit, I guess, alongside your career memories or whatever, but having that legacy of playing well in big games.
Yeah, it's nice to look back and think at it. I mean, we, once again, you know, to lose to the Dogs that day was horrific. I mean, they jumped us on the tissue, like five or six goals, and we just couldn't get it back. They had the wind or whatever the case was, and Chris Grant was just doing his thing. He just, I think, I can remember, I played the first half in the back line, and I just remember him just running around doing everything. Look, yeah, then I was lucky enough to kick a few goals in the second half. We came back. Sometimes need that spark. And Kendall thought I could do that at times. So yeah, I'm pretty proud of those games. The Collingwood game was really good. Played, you know, once again, played three quarters in the back pocket and then moved down the forward line, kick a goal, in the last quarter, which helped us get over the line at that stage.
So you talk about your relationship with, Ken Shelton. Obviously, then being moved on as coach of the club. And so how did you take that change after the time that he'd been there?
I thought it was sad. Ken and I have had a couple of really good conversations in the last year. He's up in Echuca, and I rang him up a couple of times because they're through the floods. So I really wanted to reach out and make sure he was okay. And we were able to really have some good conversations about it. And I was really sad when he left. He brought in Peter Hudson as and which probably helped him get the job at the time. And when you bring a big name like that in, I think after that 3 years, Peter had probably run his race in the club. But Kenny said, from what I gather, Kenny said, if they're going to get rid of Peter, I said that I'd go at the same time. That's how I got in there, and I'm going to stick to my word. And still, it doesn't seem right to me. I still think he should have been coach. Stan was there as he was doing other stuff as, assistant coaching and stuff like that. And he got the job there, and I did like Stan at the start. But yeah, Kenny should have been coach for sure. Having said that all, if Trevor Barker wasn't sick, he'd be coach. So that's probably the sad part of it all.
It feels like 93, an incredibly frustrating year. Beat Collingwood at Victoria Park, beat Carlton at Princess Park, beat Geelong by 12 goals at Waverley, beat North twice, who were on top of the ladder all year, but had some bad losses in there too. And obviously the Nicky Windmayer episode where he left the club for a bit, Plugger was injured. From your point of view, as someone inside the club, went wrong in 93? Because it feels like it was an opportunity in an even season for us to do a bit better than that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it just went pear shaped, didn't it? There was a lot of things going on internally that everyone started to see, and I think that the strength of the management wasn't enough to keep things under control, and unfortunately, just it went the wrong way. And our season was up and down. You can't do all those things then lose some of the games we did to how we did and not make the finals. And we didn't deserve to at the end of the day. It was, but I think when you look back and you think of all the things that happened through that time, it should never have even gone that way. It shouldn't have happened, and it wouldn't happen in this day and age the way that happened then. But, it did, and, that was the end of some certain things around the club.
I want to ask you about your jumper numbers. Obviously, you started in the 44 and played a couple of seasons in 44 and moved to number 8.
Yep.
And then ahead of the 94 season, I think moved to number 1.
Yep.
How did the jumper numbers get assigned? Did you have any say? Like, how did that work?
I'm not too sure how that all worked. I think I spoke about Murray Ablett before. He was a recruiter, but he played a few reserve games in the early 80s, he wore 58. So that was actually my first number in the reserves. In my first reserve game in 87, I kicked 11 goals, 4 against Sydney up in Sydney. I hadn't had a kick actually in the first 22 minutes. I looked up and I hadn't had a kick in the first quarter. Then by quarter time, I had 6. So I kicked 11 goals, 4 and 3 hit the post. So that was the number 58. So then I got to 44. I don't know, they just offered me 44 because 58 was obviously too high. I'm not too sure. And then after a couple of seasons, it was number 8. I think Peter Russo left and they said, do you want to come number 8? And I said, yeah, okay, I will. Don't know if I should have or I shouldn't have. But then 94, Barks wrote a letter and asked when, I think Stephen Newport asked if I could wear number 1. So that was my ultimate, dream to wear number 1. It was pretty cool to have that.
So your first 3 Brownlow vote game in your career? Against Fitzroy, 24, round 24, 31 disposals, kicked the goal. You picked up Brownlow votes before then. Do you think you may have hadn't been recognised for the efforts you'd put in some of the games? Like you'd picked up a 1 or a 2 or that sort of thing, but the 3 finally came along. Do you think there's any games you probably should have got 1 before then?
Lockett, Lowe, Harvey, Ma, Kirk, McAdam, Crawley, Grant. I'm still going down. I am below the bottom of that list, and I try to grow my hair long. I try to wear long sleeves, as they said, because you might get some, umpires look. But let's be honest, for me to be playing with those players and and even think I could get a Brownlow vote, you know, against some of the players we play against. You know, it's phenomenal. So, yeah, like certainly not thinking I should have got more. That's for sure.
Yeah, so it's all down to a name.
Well, when you've got Robert Harvey running around, you know, getting 35 possessions, he's getting tagged by 4 different people a quarter. You know, like it's, and you got Plugger kicking 150 goals, and we're coming 13th on the ladder, or whatever the case is. You got Lowy taking 280 marks a year, like you know, Winmar's running through the centre, just doing what he likes. You know, so
your name popped up on Twitter a couple of weeks ago because somebody shared the bit of commentary, not of the Sheldon incident, but of the winning goal in that same game. They just said, "I'll finish the passage of play. What happened here?" Yeah. And you were the answer to that question. And people started talking about you a bit. And Trevor Barker was obviously noted not just as a superstar, but he was pretty popular with the ladies during his career. And I got the impression from Twitter that so were you, based on the replies that everybody had through, that you were something of a favourite. Did that come across? Did you get that impression from the crowd? Because these days it's remembered that way.
Very happily married for 20 years now. And, I think the crowd was up and down on me a lot. To be honest, like, you know, I think they had a bit of a love-hate relationship with me for various reasons. There was a big thing. Trevor gave me he did this thing for the Herald Sun. He gave me his black book at one stage, and it was a bit of write up about it and had a bit of fun about certain things. But yeah, it's just, it's all good fun, you know.
I want to ask you what happened at the end of 1995, because when I look back as a fan and you know, I was 5, 6 in those early 90 years and kind of grew up through that period. And I had no recollection until last week of your time at Carlton. And then I went back and had a look, and you were traded for pick 19, which was Barry Hall. Barry Hall came to the club with that pick. But I guess what facilitated that move? Was it something that you asked for? Did the club kind of force it through? How did that happen?
Yeah, it just Stan and I saw things differently. You know, I'm so upset that I had to leave. I never wanted to leave. I was actually going to West Coast. The deal had been done, and then St Kilda pulled out of it because I think they offered Turley and the full forward who actually come the next year. What was his name?
Heatley.
Yeah. So I had a pretty strong friendship with Chris Mainwaring for a long time, and Mick Mulhouse, and I spent a week with Mick Mulhouse in Melbourne, and yeah, I was there, and then they pulled out of it the last day. And then, so then Carlton rang up, and you know, I was able to go there after that. Look, it's such a sad thing. I think I was a bit done. I was jogging and doing my calf. I just couldn't get games together. And I signed a decent contract for some years, and then it just wasn't working for them. So after the first year, they decided they didn't want me anymore. So. And then I did a pre-season, went straight to the Bulldogs, did a pre-season under Terry Wallace in 97. And I was the last person left in there, and he came to me the night before the draft and said, "Yep, we're going to draft you." And then later on that night, he got a phone call from a 6'6" guy in Adelaide whom he said they took him, which I believe is the swimmer's dad who wins all the gold medals now, 100 metre swimmer.
Chalmers. South Australian. Yeah.
So, don't like his daddy rang up and said he's going to come. And he never came. He had a $50 bet with his mates that he could get drafted that night. And he didn't, whatever, went to the Bulldogs. So, he sort of took me out of that. So, yeah, that was it, unfortunately.
So, early in that time at Carlton, you obviously come up against St Kilda in the night grand final. Well, you see, because I think most of the footage I saw of you watching the tape back years later was a lot of time on the bench, it seemed to be. But were you watching on, looking at St Kilda, sort of thinking, hey, that team actually could go somewhere? Just that night, it just all gelled, everything worked. Did it look like a team that was going to go somewhere in those next few years?
Oh, look, I was the only person in navy blue that was smiling. So make of that what you will, but Yeah, look, they were phenomenal that night. They just seemed to have changed and had risen into this, you know, just gelled team. And the younger players had come through beautifully. Winmar, it was really surreal playing against the players who I'd played with for nine years or so. But yeah, so that was, I was very happy for them, you know, that they won the premiership and where they were going to go from there because it seemed good.
Now, you played the one game with Carlton, two goals from a couple of kicks against Melbourne. Probably don't need to talk too much about the rest of your time at Carlton. But so just wanted to ask you, I guess, all those players that you named before, who was the best player that you played with?
Yep.
And then, I guess, just off the back of that, a couple of the guys that are no longer with us, Trevor Barker and Danny Frawley. What are some of your favourite memories of those two guys?
Yeah. Look, between... how do you go past Lockett? Like, seriously, what he could do. Just amazing agility, amazing. He can take these massive grabs over, you know, packs. And he was just so fast. His goal-kicking ability, you know, just unbelievable. And you've got someone like Robert Harvey, you get 35 hard possessions a game. You know, you watch 35 possessions these days and they get six in 3 seconds. Mate, he did not get six in 3 seconds. He ran, you know, 25 Ks a game. And you got Stuart Lowe, who would, you know, how many marks is the best player take now? I'm not too sure, but it's not 280. I'm pretty sure it'd be under 150. You know, so the team that we actually had, when you look back, it's amazing that there wasn't, you know, two or three premierships really there. So out of those players, you know, how do I go past Winmar watching him run around? Unbelievable what he did, you know, like you're on the ground and you just cannot believe what you're seeing. But Plugger probably sits at the top. Danny Frawley was unbelievable to me. He was, you know, the captain and had a very good friendship with him, did a lot of work with him with the AFL, different clinics and stuff. So I spent a lot of time with him. He was always there to, you know, support you, back you up. Obviously, a sad thing with Spartan, you know, to think you just can't ring him up anymore and have a chat to him and him be smart to you and, you know, like, and then ring you back later and just, you know, just, I heard that question, yeah, you got to do this. You know, you sort of, he's a captain and he's sort of took that role on seems for life for some players, you know, and that's such an important thing to have, to be able to call up a role model, someone he looked up to or someone, you know, to have that ability to do that. And Trevor is just my hero, still is. You know, to him to take me on board as, you know, when I was 16, I used to stay at his house on weekends to train and come to the footy. And, you know, we had this amazing friendship that we used to come up to the Gold Coast every year together at the end of the season. He used to cook me breakfast when he retired, cook me breakfast every Saturday morning. I used to have bacon and eggs at his house Saturday mornings, you know, and I still can't believe it. He's the sort of guy, when I've got my jaw broken in 88, I used to go to his house and he'd make me soup and he'd eat an apple and a steak in front of me. he's just the kindest, nicest hearted person. And for the superstar, megastar he was for that club and for the VFL, AFL, he's just, I miss him all the time. Like, I always think of him. I always, always wish I could talk to him. I always wish he could meet my kids. You know, I just miss him. I do get a bit emotional when I talk about him. Sorry.
No, not a problem. Just last one from me, mate. You're wearing a Skills Beast T-shirt, I can see.
Yes. Thank you.
you played with Plugger, and now you're working with Jason Dunstall.
Yes.
Why don't you give the listeners a bit of a wrap of what Skills Beast is and how that came about?
Yep. About 5 years ago, I was just watching a bit of footy and stuff, and I saw a massive problem with skill technique. That was one of my things. I think I had pretty much well for my left and right foot. I thought I was quite a skilled player. And I woke up one morning and just started writing all this stuff down about what's needed to be, you know, how to kick, what to do. And I come up with a training aid, which you put around your waist. It's a sleeve, and then there's a rotation cord that comes out. And I put it on, and it actually worked. When you put this on, you could actually kick a drop punt. So I give it to my daughters. I gave it to some friends who can't tip that well, and they put it on straight away. And within two kicks, they were kicking a drop punt. So we haven't got the hardest ball in the world to kick. It's not round, and, you know, it can drop anywhere, go anywhere. So I started off with a plumbing, you know, the white plumbing tube. Yeah, sorry, cut that up, put that there. And anyway, cut a long story short, I got a bit further down. I got some shin guards when you see skills specialist, I mean, I got some shin guards to put on. I made it. And I looked around and I had a relationship with Jason in the early 90s. We used to do a bit of stuff together, go to the races and hang out a little bit here and there. I hadn't spoken to him for a long time. So I gave him a call and I said, Bung, I said, I've got this thing that I've invented. I'd like you to have a look at it, please. Because I think I've got something here for the AFL. And he said, you can show me, but I'm not going to like it, but you can come and show me anyway. I said, there you go. It's just how he is. I'm on the Gold Coast. So I flew down to see him and we're meeting up at his house, and then we're going to go to the park at Albert Park that's near him, and get there. And it's pouring with rain. So we can't go out and have a kick. So I'm showing him the skills beast in his lounge room. So we're in his lounge room. He's got it on and we're kicking the footy in his lounge room. Anyway, he calls it a light bulb moment. He thinks it's the most amazing thing. Every kid, every player should need it to have, you know, kicking the left and right foot. So, yeah, from that day, he helped me make it into the beast it is, I guess, today by fine-tuning it and having it how it is now. And he's been unbelievable the way he talks about it and has it. It's just a great training aid for any kid who wants to use it or any, you know, like we've been fortunate enough to have a few AFL clubs have it used during pre-season to help some kids and help some people with their goal kicking and their field kicking. So we're hopefully we're in discussions with the AFL. They're spending $1 billion over the next 10 years, and we hope that some might come our way, and we can definitely help some kids and girls and whoever needs a bit of advice and to kick for coaches.
Finally, to finish up here, you've spoken about the players that you played with and the players that you loved and that sort of thing. Going from that's in the past now, you're obviously still a St Kilda fan. How are you seeing the players got now? Is there anyone you sort of look at or follow really closely and really like the look of, or where are you sitting with currently supporting the club?
I live on the Gold Coast, so I get to watch a lot. When they come up here, I certainly go and watch them. I'm a big fan of Steele, and I have been from the start. I think he's a great leader. I just love how he's the one that's now that does the Lenny Hayes things. I think, and if I was going to pick one to watch who I really enjoyed watching last year, was Mitch Allams. I think he's going to be the one to take us the next 10 years. He's a serious player. Oh, way he attacks the ball and way he thinks about certain things. He's really good.
Yeah, a good shout. Craig, it's been a pleasure going through your journey. Some wonderful moments. It was a great era of footy, and we've spoken to a lot of guys that played footy with you during that period. It's probably no coincidence that we've gravitated back to that particular side. But thank you very much for joining us, and we wish you all the best going forward.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks so much.